Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow, coming to you from Radio Row at the Los Angeles Convention Center. And there is a lot going on here today, midweek now, players making their way around promoting various endorsement deals, a few of which I've talked to for Fantasy Dirt, the radio show I do for SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio. Talked to Marshall Faulk yesterday. Saw Anthony Munoz making the rounds today. The former Rams and Bengals players, particularly in demand this week. Saw Austin Eckler, Deebo Samuel, who is bigger physically in person than I think I expected him to be. Really looks like the blend of wide receiver and running back that he has turned into on the field. Wide back. Anyway, a lot of energy here. Excitement about the game. All the ancillary things that go along with the game. Halftime, commercials, prop bets. And by the way, I love all of this stuff and have spent way too much time this week thinking about this year's halftime show. Not as much maybe as my guest today, Brandon Funston from The Athletic, who's put together a Super Bowl props bet sheet that you can print out and use for your party. He's dropping by in just a bit, and that should be a really fun conversation. My first guest, though, is going to focus solely on the game and the X's and O's and what we're expecting to see and the questions that we have about defensive looks and strategy. And I tell you what, I've had a lot of conversations about the game this week, and I have heard so many reasons why the Rams are going to win. How the Bengals O-line cannot protect Joe Burrow, why he will not be able to continue to play at the level that he's played at lately. And I'll be honest, all of this scares me. As in, I too am picking the Rams, and all of this consensus is weirdly pushing me to the Bengals. It just feels too clean. It's too obvious. And they're there for a reason, right? They're here for a reason. They didn't just fall into the Super Bowl with a fluky win over a team they never should have beaten. They took down the Kansas City Chiefs. They did that twice in 5 weeks. Plus the Titans, the number one seed, plus the Raiders. Anyway, I look at the X's and O's and I come to the same conclusion that most are, that the Rams are the better team in this game, but the cleanliness of that conclusion is starting to scare me. So I've called on Seth Galina from PFF, who wrote a really good piece on the O-line D-line matchup that had an interesting spin on it. Specifically, he found a way that the Bengals can turn their disadvantage into an advantage. It is very smart, and so I'm very excited to talk to him. So let's go ahead and break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
Two on two on two, ready? Three.
Seth, I loved your piece about the matchup on the line, and I would love to kind of get into that to start off. You wrote about the biggest mismatch of the game, the one that everybody's talking about, the Bengals offensive line versus the Rams defensive line, and the ways that the Bengals can make that mismatch work in their favor, which is, I think, the interesting twist that you bring to the table. Before we get into the ways that they can make it work for them, let's discuss how bad it's actually been for Cincy's O-line. Because they cut down on the sacks against KC. So is that a sign that they got better or had less trouble?
I think it's a sign that Burrow made some plays for them and that the sacks didn't end up on the score sheet when they were there, right? They were there for the taking for the Chiefs defense. The pressure rate was, again, nothing is going to be as bad as a Tennessee game in the history of football, it feels like. But like, it was still bad against KC, and it was bad against the Raiders, and it's been bad for most of the season, right? I mean, we know this. This is not a good offensive line. It's even tough to find, like, one, like, you know, Jonah Williams has had some good time. Quentin Spain's had some good time. But, like, you know, one through five, and, you know, if you include Jackson Carmen, one through six, I mean, it's just not very good. And, you know, what I wrote in the article was, like, it's probably the most lopsided O-line versus D-line matchup you could have this season in the NFL, and it just so happens it's in the Super Bowl, which I feel like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's not good.
That's not great. Is it true that their PFF grade as a line actually was worse in the Kansas City game?
That's very possible. I can look that up for you. But yeah, that's, I wouldn't be surprised one bit if it was worse in that game, because I think, like, you know, the sacks are, the nine sacks is like, it's a lot. But when you look at how Burrow has played in those two games, and, like, you know, he's always trying to get out of sacks. Like, that's his play style, right? He's not going to just sit there and even though he can, like, find his check down and be accurate like that, I do think that one of his things is trying to escape. We saw it work at a super high level in 2019 at LSU, it's hit or miss more in the NFL because he's not like the athlete that, you know, let's say a Josh Allen is, right? We know that. I mean, he has other traits, but he's not that type of athlete. So there's a hit or miss aspect, and you can have a miss game where you get 9 sacks taken against you when the offensive line is also very poor in front of you. Chiefs, 51.2 cumulative pass block rate against them, and then 66.6 against the Titans. So yeah, it actually was worse on a cumulative level against
the
Chiefs.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, 16 pressures. 36.4% pressure rate is like, wow. If you were playing quarterback, if I was playing quarterback, I have problems. I play flag football quarterback. I have problems when it's like the one rusher is against me. So I can't imagine when it's basically 5 guys who are free on me every play.
It all falls apart. So Burrow obviously kind of figured out how this was going in the Kansas City game and started getting the ball out really quick. What did that do to his ADOT?
Yeah, I think it was like super low, especially by the second half. Must have been under 5 yards. And you see, you know, the last play before the field goal to take the lead in the fourth quarter. I think it's third and 8, something like that. And he just gets to the end of his drop and throws a swing. And it was like, he's like, I'm done. I don't want to be here anymore. You know, it's that meme we're seeing there from like the TV show with the guy in the mask. He's like, I don't want to be here anymore. Like, I'm done. I'm just done. I don't want to be in this pocket anymore. And you saw that throughout the second half. And the nice thing is there are other quarterbacks who would be dealing with this type of pressure, but wouldn't be able to throw the ball accurately.
Right.
When they're just trying to get rid of the ball at the end of their drop back. So I think obviously Burrow being that he's such an accurate quarterback and obviously processes information super fast. So he's getting it to like kind of the right guy. Mm-hmm. But you're seeing not a lot of him like being like, hey, I'm going to go through my reads and maybe find something in the intermediate level, try more of a tight window throw, which we know he's good at. He was just like, hey, I'm done here. Like, I don't 1, 2, 3 and the ball's out.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me because I feel like that was the Chiefs defense that we're talking about. The Rams defense is different in a way that is a lot scarier for Cincinnati. Aside from the talent level, how will they look different to Burrow in this situation?
So they like to, you know, it's been 2 years now, starting with Brandon Staley, what he did when he came and was the Rams defensive coordinator in 2020, and now into the Raheem Morris era of Rams defensive coordination. They like to play, you know, what we'd call an odd front, meaning you play with a nose tackle, someone directly over the center, opposed to what most teams do in the NFL and have done for quite a few years is run with your nose guard is like on the shade, on the shoulder of the center. So now they're able to put basically 5 defensive linemen on the field, and they're really good, right? So it's like, you know,
really between, good 5. Yes, yeah.
It's a really good 5. And, you know, even after Donald and Von Miller now, you know, Leonard Floyd's having a really good season. A'shaun Robinson is playing really well. And Greg Gaines is playing really well. So it's like the 5 are really, really good. But this is what they wanted to do even before the Von Miller trade. And it's something that I went back and looked at some film from before the trade. They basically did the same thing, but they had Terrell Lewis, you know, one of their young outside linebacker edge rushers in that role that Von Miller ended up playing. They like to play with those 5. And to a certain degree, it's great for them because all their players can win one-on-ones, right? There's no guys who you're scared about. Oh, well, we're going to lose. And especially in this matchup, right? Like,
totally.
Aaron Donald is the best one-on-one player that the league has ever seen, right? And then by the way, there's another Hall of Famer next to him, Von Miller. So like, that's the way they like to play it, especially on early, you know, first and second down. Obviously, when we get to third down, more passing situations, they will come out of it, play more, you know, 4 down defensive linemen rather than the 5. But that is their thing this year, and they're very, you know, rigid in that sense. That early downs, they're going to play with those 5 on the field, in just 5 across type of look.
So, thinking of it like 1 versus 1 and the matchups that are going to take place there, then, you know, people talk about Aaron Donald and like how you have to double him, How do you double him if you put five on the line? Is that the whole, is that why they like going with that? Because it sort of forces, especially with that type of group where they're going to win their one versus one, you know, matchup pretty much every time, outside of certain circumstances, like when they're facing Trent Williams or something like that. But in this case, you know, what do you do with Aaron Donald? Is this the whole reason that they do this?
Yeah, I think they, you know, it's part of, you know, one of the things that Brandon Staley brought in was this ability to play with the nose, play in, again, like I said, an odd style defense and still stay with two high safeties, right? And like, because that this is the new meta in the NFL, which is like, hey, we need to stop the Chiefs, literally the Chiefs, from throwing all these explosive touchdown passes against us when we're playing with one high safety. And when you play with one high safety, you're basically putting your cornerbacks on an island by themselves. And most teams don't have the type of players to deal with, again, the Kansas City Chiefs and some other teams. So teams are saying, okay, we're going back to two high safeties. Now we can at least, you know, give body presence or double team the outside receivers. We don't have to let our cornerbacks, you know, play one-on-ones and stuff like that. And the Rams did this thing last year where they were saying, so when you do that, you are saying, let's say we're taking a player out of the intermediate, the second level of defenders. You know, first level is, you know, the defensive line, second level linebackers, third level safeties, corners, whatever. So we have to take a player out of that level because he's going to be a deep safety now, right? It's not going to be like Cam Chancellor back in the day where he's like almost a linebacker. You know, they're both going to be deep safeties. So, well, we don't want to put a lot of guys on the defensive line. We want to have four defensive linemen. Then we have two linebackers, a 4-2 box, like everyone plays, no problem. The Rams said, hey, we have all this talent. We want to create and these one-on-ones for Aaron Donald by playing with five defensive linemen like you're talking about. And we figured out a way how to do it where we actually have a 5-1 box instead of a 5-2 box like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would play, for example. And that was kind of took the lead by storm last year. Now, Raheem Morris is coming into this Brandon Staley type system. It feels like Sean McVay had told him, hey, we want to do this again this year. So here's the first 15 pages of Brandon Staley's playbook, and you can figure out the rest, basically. It's a simplified version of the Brandon Staley defense from last year. And again, it's like create these one-on-ones because you have the best one-on-one player in the league and you want him to get as many one-on-ones as possible. And we have to find a way to match it on the back end by alleviating, you know, just giving other teams more space at that second level of defense.
All right. And that's, you wrote about that actually last spring about this new trend of the two high safeties and going away from the Pete Carroll Seahawks staying with the middle of the field closed. And I do want to get back to that in just a bit. And also a lot of things that you just said there lead me to more questions about this matchup, because obviously you talked about Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs. Well, Ja'Marr Chase is that for the Bengals. And so it kind of feels like it's just begging to defend this team the same way. But getting back to the line, so if the Rams do have five down, then what does that mean for the Bengals in terms of what they would try to do against that to counteract?
You know, my and again, I wrote this when I tweeted at the article that I wrote. I wrote that it is a very galaxy brain take. Like, it's tough. Like, no matter what they're going to do, it's going to be tough because they just, the individual matchups there on the offensive line are not good. You know, Aaron Donald versus Hakeem Adeniji is not good. Like, we know that. It is what it is. But like I said, if you're going to play with those five down defensive linemen and you're still going to try to stay as long as possible pre-snap with those two high safeties, you give up space in that second level of defense. You have one linebacker, you know, it's Troy Reader. He's on the field and there's a lot of space on either side of him. So, and it's kind of one of the reasons why Jalen Ramsey has been a good bet to play in the slot, because now you get a real good player there, you know, at that second level of defense, rather than playing in the corner and maybe you can run him off and do all that stuff. So for me, the Bengals have to find this balance where it's like, hey, we want you to play with those five defensive linemen, even though they're really good, because it's going to give us space to throw slants and stick routes and speed outs and all that quick game stuff that Joe Burrow was really good at, right? Because he, again, great processor, great timing, great accuracy. And the receiving core is obviously really good too. So like, we have to do that, but we can't do it enough so that they say, okay, well, wait a minute. We're just going to play with four down defensive linemen in a 4-2 box, and now we're not going to give you that space.
Yeah.
And guess what? We're still going to win on the defensive line because, like, that doesn't even matter to us.
Because our four can beat your five. Yeah.
Exactly. So you're going to double team Greg Gaines. You're going to try and double team Aaron Donald. Forget it, right? It doesn't even matter. There's so much talent there. And like finding that balance. So like you're going to have to be in a situation where you're going to, and I don't suggest them do this a lot, but I do think on like, you know, early downs, I do think they probably, I hate saying it, they're going to have to run the ball and be okay with getting 1 to 2 yards. Or Joe Mixon, being the elite running back that he is, makes a move, you know, cutback run like we saw at the end of the Chiefs game and make some yards that way. Because they're not going to win in the run game either. It might even be worse in the run game. Like, that's how bad it is. So like you just gotta find this balance.
So you're saying that the running on early downs would get the Rams into the front that they want?
Into the front that they want. Which is what the Rams want to do anyways. It would just scare me if you just came out and threw the football all over the place, that the Rams would just say, okay, well, we're not going to do that anymore.
So wait, just to be clear, what is the front that the Bengals should want? Because it feels like both scenarios are kind of bad, right? If the Rams go with four, then that's ideal in the sense that, you know, common knowledge would say that you don't want five of those guys coming at Joe Burrow, but then also you're plugging up the middle of the field, which feels like if you're going to win with four anyway, I'd almost rather have that middle of the field and trust Joe Burrow to just get the ball out quick and find an open guy fast.
I think the Rams, like, I'm not a super fan of the kind of rigid five man defensive line stuff that they're doing in with the Rams. Now they're going to win a super. Shouldn't say that. They're playing in the Super Bowl game. So
wow, you just did it. You just were like, nothing I'm saying matters because the Rams are going to win. Foregone and we can end the interview now.
All right. Well, I'll see you. This was fun. I had a great time. they're playing in the Super Bowl. So like, you know, but the defense has not been as good as it was last year. Now, a lot of that has to do with losing John Johnson, losing Troy Hill, like two really good players. Sebastian Joseph Day hasn't played the second half of the season. So like, you know, that has something to do with it, but I do think there's a simplicity in what they're doing with their five down defensive front. And again, if you're any other team, like maybe you don't want to see those five down defensive fronts. But I think with the Bengals can kind of like bypass the pass rush by getting the ball out quickly, and it's tougher to do that when there's, you know, seven guys in coverage rather than six guys in coverage, right? Like that. That's the math you're trying to make sure that they give you six guys in coverage rather than seven guys in coverage, even though that means a very vaunted pass rush with all those five players on the field.
So you are proposing, and I know that this was hard for you to do, that they run the ball, Joe Mixon, early downs.
Like, but not even 50-50, not even, you have to make the Rams believe that you're going to run the football.
Okay.
Right? It's like not even like that you're, because like I said, once they,
what
once
is
they
the say, right, what is the right oh, mix man. There? What's the max? Because I know you don't want them to run the ball.
No, because like,
on those downs.
Because like they're not, those runs are not going to go anywhere. And one of the issues with the Bengals in this playoff run, let's be clear here, the offense has not been good. I think a lot of that has to do with the offensive line. But the offense is just, as a whole, has not been good in this playoff run. You know, minus the first half of the Raiders game, just hasn't been very good. The defense has kind of got them to where they are now. The offense has a chance to get back to what it was in the regular season, but still, like, it hasn't been good for the past three games. So, like, you know, and one of the reasons is because they've decided they're going to run the football on early downs. Like, their like neutral down run rate has gone up in the playoffs, even though over the second half of the season, when they were starting to roll teams, they were throwing the football over the yard. So again, it's like, I don't want them to be 60% run just to keep, because then you're not getting the benefits that I'm talking about in quick game passing if you're 60% run. So it's got to be somewhere in like 30 to 40%, 30, let's say 35% range. So you're just doing something that makes them believe that you can run the football when you don't really want to, because it won't be very good if they do it.
perfect world for the Bengals. They get what they want where this is concerned. What does that mean for the individual players that we will see making plays? And which players will be making them, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
So there's two things here. Like, I think that what you saw late I think this could be a big T. Higgins game just in general for two reasons. A, we saw at the end of the Chiefs game, Burrow saying, okay, I have T. Higgins on a 5-yard in route. He's getting the ball and I'm going to let him work. And we saw, on the last two drives, I believe, you basically saw Joe Burrow scramble or him hitting T. Higgins quickly and then, letting T. Higgins work. So I think that, if they're going to give them the space with a 5-1 box in that intermediate level, T. Higgins can work it all the time. T. Higgins. Now, one of the things that's changed from the Rams in 2020 to 2021, when they played these 5-down defensive fronts, is they are, after the snap, spinning down to a 1-high safety defense after the snap, which means, they've changed safeties, Weddle's there and Fuller's there and all these guys. So, one of the two safeties is coming down after the snap to play in the box, right? To okay. give a 5-2 look post-snap. A lot more than we saw in 2020. So I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I looked them up yesterday. In 2020, they played cover, the Rams on early downs played cover three like 25% of the time, or even less, like 20% of the time. And this year they're playing it up to 45% of the time on early downs.
Huh.
So even though they're trying to keep the same structure together, I think Raheem Morris, being kind of an older guy who's been in the NFL for a while, is looking at this defense that Brandon Staley brought in and said, I don't feel comfortable doing the same type of stuff, which is playing with a 5-man defensive line and still staying in 2-high safeties. Mm-hmm. And when we get 1-high safety, we test cornerbacks. Now, do you want to test Jalen Ramsey? Maybe. Like, Ja'Marr Chase is a hell of a player. So, like, that is going to be a great matchup, which may decide a Super Bowl. But on the other side, T. Higgins has all the room to work with that he wants. And he has a size advantage right. over all the other corner, Darius Williams or whatever. So I think if it's going to be them controlling that intermediate part of the field, it'll be T. Higgins' quick stuff. And I think if the Rams want to, late rotate into a cover one or cover three defense, it could be T. Higgins down the field, making plays that he has made a lot this year, on the sideline, back shoulder, over the top, that type of thing. I think it could be a T. Higgins game.
This is an interesting another layer of this, matchup, I think, for me, because the Ja'Marr Chase issue is an issue, right? Like, he's now in that Tyreek Hill category, whatever, where he's had so much success with those vertical routes that it's hard to cover him with a cornerback and just go single coverage. And then the question here is Jalen Ramsey good enough that you can cover him that way? Because, obviously if you do go too high, then the Bengals have started bunching receivers on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of those guys, if you've got three receivers on the opposite side of Ja'Marr Chase, one of those guys is going to be open. And so that creates a problem. It feels like the Rams might be the perfect defense to stop that because they have Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say is, if you're going to go and do that, put three receivers to one side, Chase to the other side, and the team is going to play you in 2-high safeties, you want to work the middle of the field, intermediate levels. And, one of the more underrated players in this matchup is Tyler Boyd, right? He's been a really good receiver for years.
So good.
And that is the guy you're going to get matched up with over the middle of the field if you're the Rams. And if you're the Bengals, you like that matchup all day. And then the other thing is, like you said, so now you're saying, okay, well, wait a minute. We don't need to play with 2-high safeties. We don't need to, like, essentially double Ja'Marr Chase. Now, not always a true, like, we have two guys who are going to run with Ja'Marr Chase wherever. But, like, in a sense, it's the double team, right, when you put a safety over top of him. And if you don't need to do that, all of a sudden that second safety can get his eyes to where the other receivers are. And you can, like, push the coverage all – you can flood the coverage all the way to T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd and if it's C.J. Uzomah or Drew Sample or whoever it is, that's just difficult. Like, if Jalen Ramsey can win that one-on-one – That's difficult. Now, we're talking about two great players. So I don't know if it's going to be just guaranteed that Jalen Ramsey wins because he's the best corner in the league, whatever. Like, Chase can play. His connection with Burrow is insane. So,
and if he wins a few, that could be damaging. You could shut him down, you know, 90% of the time, and that other 10% could be ball game.
Because these aren't slants that he's taken for 3 yards and he gets tackled. Now, obviously, Chase can take a slant to the house as well, but like, if we're talking about vertical passing, these are chunk plays, right? And these are the plays that win you football games, whether you do it, you know, 8 times in a game, or you just, like you said, if you do it 3 times in a game on 3 separate drives, those could be scoring drives for you.
Yeah. We, Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer, who I know is a friend of yours, wrote a really good piece about this. I think breaking this down and talking about the teams that are from that, you know, Fangio Staley coaching tree and how they've done against the Bengals this year defensively, and pointed out that the Broncos had a lot of success against him because they have that star elite corner that a lot of teams don't have in Patrick Surtain. And so now, you know, trying to figure out what this all means for this matchup. I mean, Jalen Ramsey is obviously that. So, and Patrick Surtain did have a lot of success against him. So I'm really eager to see how that one plays out. And also, I think how it looks early on, right? Like, we're going to get some clues early on. My guess is that they'll try it, you know, and then we'll see if Jalen can stop him. And then that will dictate how much we see of it as the game goes on. On the other side of the ball, we hear Stafford talked about as an upgrade from Goff, which I think can be confused with does the same things that Goff does, but just does them better. In reality, the ways in which he is better change things for the offense. What specifically have you seen that he unlocks?
You know, not to like boil it down to like one specific thing, but it happens to be my favorite thing in the world, so I'm going to talk about it. And that is the backside dig route. That is, so when we talk about dig routes, we're talking about a route that breaks at, I don't know, the Rams and that like Sean McVay, Shanahan tree, they like to run this route between 12 and 14 yards, and it breaks inwards. You know, 90-degree hard cut breaking inwards. And what you do is you put it on the backside of the concept. So like, it's just one-on-one. Well, if we need to get to this route, we will get to this route. And to the front side, let's say it's 3 receivers to the front side, you have whatever crazy concoction you can think of on the whiteboard. This guy runs here and this guy runs there. And then that means the cornerback has to pick high and low and we'll throw blah, blah, blah. You know, like that's how, you know, football concepts work in the passing game. And what's happened is with Matthew Stafford's, his ability to say, okay, I'm going through my progressions during my dropback. I get to the end of my dropback. I don't really like what I'm seeing to the front side. You know, I don't like what I'm seeing. They're doubling Cooper Kupp. They're doing something. I don't like it. No one's open. I have the confidence in myself and my pocket management and my eyesight and my arm strength to work my eyes all the way back across the field to this lone route that is coming into my vision late. That's not something Goff could do. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just not, it was not part of the offense. And they set up the offense in a very different way because of that. So his ability, and now you pair him with one of the best in the league at doing this in Odell Beckham. They did have Robert Woods run those routes early in the season. And Robert Woods, obviously an elite receiver, and he was doing a good job with them. But Odell Beckham, as we're seeing, is still that receiver. Outside, one-on-one, I will always win my one-on-one. You can trust me, Matt Stafford, to get your eyes back to the backside and throw that route. And it's really hard. Like you know, you think about it, you know, playing quarterback, there's a lot of bodies around you. As you hold on to the football, those bodies are getting closer to you who wanna touch you and bring you to the ground, right?
Bring like they want
to
do bodily harm.
Yes. They want to do bad things.
Touch
to you
is such a passive way of describing what happens on the
Well, ball. Like I said, I play flag football, so like that's how
they
we
wanna
do it.
Touch you. I love it.
So
okay, yes.
So just the idea of being like, hey, because quarterbacks, oh my God, quarterbacks love to throw to their first read. Like because
some cause,
like,
more than others
it's safe. Yeah, exactly. And it's so safe. It's so safe. I don't have the football anymore. I can't be touched anymore. Like it's illegal
it's
for
like
them
a
to
hot
touch
potato.
Me now.
Your problem.
Yes, exactly. Right. So like they don't want to do this. So Matt Stafford's ability to say, I can't do this. I feel comfortable doing this. And then even just like moving your eyes in a split second from like the left to right or right to left, and then finding that open receiver when you're just seeing kind of flashes of color, you know, different jerseys, and you're like, oh, that's a red jersey, I can't throw it there. Oh, but that's a blue jersey, so I'm good. Like that, it's really hard. And Matt Stafford is really, really good at it.
They're using a lot less pre-snap motion this year. Is it for that reason? Because they don't need to create all of the, like, they don't need all the bells and whistles. They can just trust him to go through the reads.
I think that's the main thing. They trust him to go through the reads. And another thing you're seeing is more of this like trips formation. So 3-by-1 formations where they really feel comfortable leaving Odell Beckham by himself on the backside. And one of the cool things is when you go with a trips formation to the front side, now you can really get Cooper Kupp open with two, you know, in a sense, really like he's the main guy, of course, right? So in a sense, you have two receivers that are clearing routes or doing a running a certain route so that a defender moves this way so we can get Cooper Kupp open. And that's easier to do when you have three receivers to one side rather than in years past when they were more 2-by-2. And now it's just one receiver who's got to clear out the defense. And now it's just like, hey, Cooper Kupp, you got to win one-on-one. Now we're giving you another player to alleviate your one-on-oneness, Cooper Kupp. And so it all works into each other. And yeah, I agree. You don't need as much motion because you just feel like Stafford can just take the snap and drop back and do it. The play action rate is about the same. So like that's been something that, you know, McVay has always leaned on. But I do think you're getting more play action shot plays. You're not getting just boot and he throws it to the flat. Boot, Goff throws it to the flat. Boot, Goff throws it to the flat. You're getting, and we saw this in the first three plays of the Bears game in week one for the Rams, how they play action and they get, I think it was Van Jefferson on like a double move down the field. And like, hey, we're coming this year. Like that was the start. And yeah, they just don't need those bells and whistles anymore.
Oh man. Okay. So
they don't need the stacks. They don't need the bunches. They don't need to, like, it's crazy how different they are.
They can go empty.
And the empty thing is we can go empty and we're not just throwing, like, you're going to throw to your first read, Goff, and it's going to be a 6-yard route. Like, we're going to go empty and we can do whatever we want out of empty. Very different.
Okay. So I'm kind of coming back around because I'll tell you what. I started this podcast by saying everyone's picking the Rams. I've been on Radio Row talking to, like, just hordes of people. What do you think about the game? Who do you like? What's your score prediction? Everybody is taking the Rams and it's scaring me away from the Rams because I feel like there's something that the Bengals have done to get to this point. It's not fluky. You know what I mean? And so it scares me a little bit that we're dismissing them. But then this conversation, even though your whole premise of your article was how they can use their biggest mismatch to their favor, even once we break it all down and get into the weeds of it, I keep coming back to the Rams. And I want to take the Bengals because I just feel like nothing goes the way that we all expect it to go. But when you really break it all down, I don't know how they make it work offensively in this matchup. And then forget, I mean, that maybe it's the defense. Maybe it is the defense, like you said, because the offense hasn't been playing well in the postseason. And the defense is why they're here. Is the defense going to have to win this game for them if they win?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, they got to hold them to like probably under 28 points. Like that would be the bare minimum. I agree with you, man. Every time you just really break this game down, it's hard to find a Bengals win. It really is. So yeah, the defense is going to have to play really well. I mean, look, the most important player in this game is Joe Burrow. Like he has to be a Superman. He has to be Superman. That's really what it comes down to. He's going to have to escape the pocket. He's going to have to make tight throws, accurate throws. He's going to have to find Chase. Even if Chase is covered, he's going to have to put the ball in the right spot. You know, it's kind of does boil down to that. And like I said, the defense got to have to play good enough. It's going to be tough. Like it's funny how we've kind of forgot that the Rams are the dream team this year. I mean, they went on, they got Stafford. They had traded for Ramsey you know, a couple of years ago. They got Von Miller in the middle of the season. Like, this is the dream team. Like, this team is supposed to win the Super Bowl. So, like, when everyone's picking them, I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like, I get why everyone's picking them. So, yeah, I think it's really boils down to Joe. That's it. It's
so
Joe.
If the Bengals win, Joe Burrow is your Super Bowl MVP. That's the
only
way.
I mean, it might be one of those things where he's playing out of his mind, but T. Higgins goes for like 8 catches for like 250 yards, and then he's the Super Bowl MVP. But we all know.
Yeah. Okay, so, but no scenario where it's like Mike Hilton because he has 2 picks or something like that.
Oh.
You think it would
honestly
have to be...
maybe Mike Hilton, 2 picks, 2 sacks, 1 fumble recovery. One of them is returned for a touchdown.
Maybe
that's how they've been so great at these individual, like 5 individual plays on defense in each of these games has really won them the game. And Mike Hilton's been a part of a couple of them, right? He's been really good. What a great pickup that he was in the offseason for them.
Low key.
Yeah,
very okay. Low-key. So what I'm gonna do now, and I'm talking about props next on the podcast. And so I'm going to just file that away. It's a Joe Burrow Super Bowl prop or like a defender. It's not Jamar Chase. It's not T. Higgins. I don't see a scenario because I think that they would reward the quarterback because if he's duress and he's getting the ball out, even if T. Higgins goes crazy, it's Joe Burrow who's like getting the ball to him in flashy ways. Like we've seen.
I think we've also built up the Joe Burrow narrative enough that if the Bengals win, like he's winning Super Bowl MVP.
All right. We figured out one thing. Seth, really appreciate
it. I don't think we figured out anything to tell you the truth.
Well, we figured out at least the direction in which I might bet Super Bowl props for MVP. Okay. That's the only one thing I'm talking about, though obviously that would require a Bengals win, so I might not actually bet it anyway. Anyway, that's a longer conversation that we'll get into next. Seth, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
For more on Seth, you can find his work on the PFF website and also on the Too High podcast and on Twitter at PFF_Seth. And you'll find lots of really good, meaty football breakdowns there. That is not what you're going to find in my next conversation. Coming up next, all of the non-game related things that make Super Bowl Sunday so special. The prop bets, the halftime show, the commercials. Brandon Funston from The Athletic is here with a few things to keep your eye on after this.
Hi, everyone. I'm Hall of Fame sportscaster Leslie Visser. And if you love sports the way I do, the people, the passion, then you'll enjoy my podcast, In Conversation, every Thursday. I've drawn from 45 years of covering all sports with people like Billie Jean King and David Duchovny and the merry prankster himself, Bill Walton.
I have reached the top of the mountain. I am having a conversation with Leslie Visser, my hero.
So please listen and subscribe wherever you stream your podcasts.
All right, so we touched on the game action. Now it's time to talk about everything else that we're going to see on Sunday, the commercials, the halftime show, the many, many prop bets that you can place. And my next guest has done us all a solid by putting together a downloadable Super Bowl party prop bets sheet. You'll find it at the Athletic website and also on his Twitter handle. His name is Brandon Funston, and he usually operates in the fantasy space. Welcome to the show, Brandon. How'd the prop bet sheet come about?
Yeah, well, you mentioned usually in the fantasy space, and of course, once you get to the playoffs, there's not as much fantasy going on. So I had to figure out a way to fill my time, enjoy football still. So this prop sheet is something I've just been doing, and that's kind of what, you know, that kind of has been the means to that end. But, you know, a lot of times I'll host a party or I'll go to some friends' parties, and, you know, it's sometimes like this year, it's the Rams and the Bengals. I mean, in my neck of the woods, there's not a whole lot of connection to either teams other than if you're an NFL fan, you just like watching the game for football. But if you really want to have a little bit more of a vested interest and kind of heighten things in a level that meets with the Super Bowl, then you kind of like, you know, you want to have like maybe a prop sheet like this that kind of takes in all the halftime and the national anthem and all the things that are going on with the pageantry of the game. And let's be honest, a lot of times you invite your friends and family over, and some of them just aren't that big of football fans. You know, they're just very casual. So my idea was to make something that it didn't matter if whether you were a football savant or if you were a very casual football fan. Either way, you have a chance to win this prop bet sheet.
What, in your experience or based on your knowledge of the way people bet these Super Bowl props, what's the most popular one? What's the one that people tend to latch onto the most?
I think the national anthem, because it's, because it's very, it has a very clear answer. And it's the start of, it gets things started. So it's one of the first things you're going to be watching as the game starts. the national anthem duration. More and more, I'm seeing the halftime show, like the first song that is going to be played is, you know, it's not as prominent to find it out there in betting spaces, but I see a lot of people talking about it and imagining how this halftime show is going to play out. So I think the halftime show is really up and coming in terms of people's interests in that and trying to find ways to tangibly bet on that.
With regard to the national anthem, where does the line stand right now? I understand it's coming down.
Yeah, like I've been doing this and it's always, you know, every year I'm always deciding whether I should put it at like 2 minutes, a minute 55. That's very standard. I think the last 16 national anthems, the average was right at just over 2 minutes. But if you take out the two duets that are in there, the average is like a minute 58. So Mickey Guyton comes in and I went on YouTube and I timed her singing like last year at the Memorial Day celebration, national celebration. And she was like a minute 30. I mean, she was
Wow.
She just no nonsense, no frills, no gimmicks, no runs. You know, she just gets from beginning to end at a minute 30. And so I saw Bet Online had it at 100 seconds. So I moved it down. I initially just opened it kind of like the norm, what was average, you know, at a 155.
Okay.
And I had to move it down because it seems like Mickey Guyton's going to be exception to the norm here. And she had one other one where she was like a minute and 23 seconds, like 7 years ago. So I think she's going to be on the low end of what we've seen historically in a national anthem.
Who historically is the low and who's the high, like for comp purposes?
I think Jewel is the all-time low. And I want to say, Alicia Keys.
That's so weird, by the way, considering the way just the Jewel songs that pop into my head are just really slow and drawn out.
And she always seems to inflect some oohs and ahs in there. You know, like she has these little weird like vocal quirks to her voice. And so you would think that maybe that would add up to be a little bit longer, but yeah, she's the lowest. And I think Billy Joel was very close to being the lowest. I think he's second lowest, and then Alicia Keys, doesn't really seem too surprising to me given the ability for her to run the ladder with her vocals and, you know, kind of the ups and downs there, that she was the longest. The duets, Aaron Neville, Aretha Franklin, I think were pretty high on the list as well. But yeah, Alicia Keys on the high, Jewel on the low.
Okay. So we're thinking if it's set at 100 minutes or 100 seconds, that would be a very, very long 100 minutes.
That would be really long. Yeah.
No one wants that. 100 seconds. Would you go over or under?
I'm right now leaning on the under because like I said, she's had like a minute 32 and a minute 23. If you go to YouTube and just see a couple of her more prominent national anthems, I do think with the Super Bowl that maybe you know, it's a vocal showcase. It's your big
milk that moment, girl.
You milk that moment. It's close enough. I might end up leaning on the over that she just really kind of settles in and like, you know, hogs the spotlight for as long as she can here.
Yeah. I think I lean that way. Yeah. If it were me, I would be like, you're going to watch me for as long as possible and look at all of these things I can do with my voice. I say that as somebody who can't do anything with my voice. There are also prop bets about what she's wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is for the fashion, you know, the fashionistas in your Super Bowl crowd. And that's it's pretty normal. I don't know a whole lot about Mickey Guyton, to be honest. I didn't know her until I found out she was singing the Super Bowl national anthem. So that I did find this prop out there sometimes, like when they set the odds in the different colors. There's a bunch at the end. I sort of like to combine them if they don't really have much of a chance. I give them a little bit better odds. So, you know, a book wouldn't do that, but because I'm just running an informal Super Bowl party, it doesn't really matter. So, but white, if you do a Google search, does kind of come up a lot when she's in performances and in spotlight situations. White does seem like the prominent one.
Have you looked back at what anthem singers have worn before, because it feels to me like I'm picturing white. And I think that has to do with the fact that you're singing the anthem and very, very like, you know, on the nose, but like to come out in red or white or blue.
Yeah. Right. Someone told me the other day, you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day. You don't wear it until Memorial Day. And I was like, I don't know what, you know, and honestly, this isn't my jam as much. So I don't remember all the past colors. I know I always put this on here. It's always nice when there's someone that has like a signature, like, oh, will they wear a hat or won't they? Or will they wear a black leather jacket? Like last year, Eric Church was the country western, a guy who was, you know, he was sang a duet with Jasmine Sullivan, and he often would wear a black leather jacket. So the question was, will he wear a black leather jacket? It turned out he wore a brown leather jacket. So the answer was no, he did not. But that was kind of his signature. You know, so there's nothing signature about Mickey Guyton. So it's kind of just completely up in the air what she'll try to do. I'm leaning towards she's going to wear gray silver. She's from Texas. Maybe it'll be a nod. I don't think she'll wear blue because that would almost be like, oh, am I a Rams fan here, you know, or something. But I could see her wearing silver gray, kind of maybe a cowboy silver or something. Makes sense to me.
Or red or blue, maybe like political implications. I mean, there's so many things that you could get into, but white feels safe, gray, silver, sort of in that same realm,
right?
Like a version of the white on the flag. I love that. This is good. This is,
yeah. And this brings up a point. Like if you're running this and you're doing this at home and everybody's relying on you, you just have to tell everybody, I am the judge and jury here. If there's some gray area between whether it's white or silver, or if it's a menagerie of colors, you got to say, this is the dominant color of this dress. Or you just say, you know what? This question gets discounted. You have to be willing to do that. So.
What about the coin flip? I know the coin flip, people like to bet on the coin flip. Should people bet on the coin flip?
This is, again, like this is part of like anybody can be an expert here. You know, there's just literally, it's going to be 50-50. And it's funny, the Athletic commissioned like three coins from where the Super Bowl coin is made. So three exact replicas. And we have three guys at the Athletic that have spent this week flipping it. They're going to flip it 1,000 times.
What?
Each. Yeah. So there'll be 3,000 flips, and I'll let you in on a little insider secret. Like one of them was about at 500 flips. And he's like, I'm really close to 50-50. Like it's really is.
Like, this is just where this is going. I'm going to stop.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's what I was saying. I was like, okay, if I was tasked with doing this and I got to 500 and I was only off 50-50 by like three, I would maybe consider fudging those results for the spare myself a bunch of monotony during that week of doing this. But yeah. And then my colleague said that like scientifically, they say like 300 flips or like 300 times doing something is like scientifically solid.
Okay.
So I guess we're going 10 times. That's what we do at the Athletic. We go 10 times above scientific,
you know, way above and beyond. What does history tell us at the Super Bowl?
29, I believe 29 for tails, 26 for heads, but heads making a comeback, three of the last four, I think eight of the last 13.
Ooh.
So, you know, we are going to, at some point, get back to even. That's what the odds would say. So right now with tails being up three, I might lean heads this year.
Yeah. I got bet against the streak, you know?
That's right.
With regard to the commercials, feels like this is, some people are calling it the crypto bowl. We're expecting a lot of crypto commercials. Five crypto companies are going to be featured in commercials, at least we know of five. And I thought it was interesting, according to Fortune, NBC's making bank on these ads. We already knew that, but like more so than usual, they're making as much as $7 million per 30 second spot. That's up 27% from last year. And 40% of this year's advertisers are new companies. And I think that that's very interesting. What do you make of that?
It is weird. Yeah, you're right. They're calling it the crypto bowl. I mean, I don't know how much you know about Bitcoin.
Nothing.
Cryptocurrency, NFTs. Like I read an NFT for dummies, like an expert just dumbing it down as much as he could. And I only kind of half got it. You know, it's very abstract in my opinion, but you know, people, it seems like, especially people younger than me are really into this stuff. And I think that has helped NBC because there's such a huge kind of like land grab time right now in the Bitcoin world that all these companies are making a ton of money right now. And they want to establish themselves as the preeminent place to, you know, for cryptocurrency or NFTs and things like that. And so they're willing to take this huge stage and pay the money.
with regard to the money that NBC is charging for those ads and the fact that it's so up, I think that makes sense. Just looking at the live television landscape, you know, people going away from network TV, it feels like live sports are really one of the only ways that you know that you're going to have eyeballs on the TV where they have to sit through the commercials. So even though Super Bowl commercials have always been valuable real estate in terms of advertising, I feel like it's maybe even more than it's ever been because everybody's streaming and not watching commercials these days. What do you do with all of this information that we do know about the commercials with regard to props?
Well, you know, a lot of it is, and this is, again, this is coin flip stuff, unless you're an insider ad guy and know how the quote unquote set list of commercials are going to be, but it's just really what shows up first on the commercial. So in the case of, FTX, which again, I don't know anything about FTX other than that they have Steph Curry, Tom Brady, Gisele Bündchen, and Shohei Ohtani on one of their commercials. So
all in the same commercial?
I believe so. And I could be wrong on that. I have not went and tried to watch any teasers or anything like that. But if they had teasers, it might be a tip as to which way. I had to do that. There was I don't know if you noticed, a Michelob Ultra teaser for, it had Peyton Manning, and he was kind of, it's a Big Lebowski kind of play where he's in a bowling outfit and he's walking up like he's going to get ready to bowl a bowling ball. And originally I thought that was a great prop. Will he throw a strike or not? You know, cause they stopped right there before he actually bowled the ball. But then Michelob yesterday came out and revealed the whole commercial. So oh. I had to change that completely because, you know, we knew the answer. So as long as these commercials are, you know, aren't released ahead of time, then you can do that. Oh, what's going to show up first? And we have another one where it's like, what's going to show up first? A moon, an astronaut, an alien, or a rocket. And I thought that was kind of random, but we have Rocket Mortgage. It's going to be, you know, advertising. We have a bunch of like Meta and Amazon, and we know how much the tech industry loves their rockets. They love space, the whole idea. So it seems like a foregone conclusion that one of those things is going to show up, and probably all of them in some order.
Well, and there's that Salesforce commercial that I've seen during the Olympics with Matthew McConaughey.
Okay.
I don't know if my guess is that they would be an advertiser since they're advertising on NBC during the Olympics.
I think the Olympics are what they're going to jump to once the Super Bowl is over. So so who knows? Maybe they're not paying up for that ad space, but they're just waiting for the Super Bowl audience to carry over into the Olympics. So
to the point of the bet, he is in space dressed as an astronaut in the ad that is coming to my mind. So again, maybe, you know, continuing the theme of the space theme that we have here as one that we can bet. What about the halftime show? I had a lot of fun last night. I literally sat down and went through each person on Apple Music, pulled up like Dre essentials, like which are the songs that I listened to a few of them. I was like, oh, that hook. Yes. Oh, yes. But then the lyrics become problematic. Right. I don't know. So there's
that's
a lot
the thing
of
with Dre. I was doing the lyric search with Dre as well. I was like, I wonder if he's going to be willing to change that up. You know, is he going to be able to radio version it, you know, and things like that.
You know who's particularly problematic in this department is Snoop. Like you could go through the whole library of Snoop and go, there are a couple that we could pull out and actually play as is without having to just go, okay, we're going to play this little clip part and that's it. And then we're getting into some problematic areas that the NFL would never allow. But some of those songs are like duets, you know, like I think it was Signs with Justin Timberlake. That's not going to be one that he plays. He's going to play one that he's known for. And so I think it kind of limits the field a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm trying to imagine how this halftime show is going to play out because it's kind of unprecedented with five massive hip hop stars like this. If five stars of any kind of music genre, it's unprecedented for the Super Bowl. But I was thinking it through. Who's going to be. So my first question that I put on my sheet is when the Super Bowl halftime show opens up, is it going to be just one person on stage, two, three, four, or five? Are they going to bring them in individually?
One.
So I'm kind of thinking it's going to be one or two. And if I was doing it, I would have like Mary J. Blige and maybe Dr. Dre out there, like the two
to start,
but maybe just Mary J. Blige. And that's why I'm kind of like, you know, if she opened with Family Affair, because it is kind of like this hip hop family that they're playing to it, the words are awesome. That beat that opened the Family Affair song is it would get everybody started. She basically, it's basically a song, let's get dancing, let's get started, let's get going while you're waiting around, you know. And so for me, I'm leaning towards Family Affair being the first song in the halftime show and to one person being out there when it starts.
You know, this is where the first song is where I really ran into a lot of trouble trying to figure out what I think, because I kept writing down notes like good way to start. Like so many of these songs that, and it all goes back to Dre, right? And the beats and the fact that he produced these songs, like what he's so good at is finding that way to start that gets your attention. And they're all so good. Like the piano from Still Dre is so good. The intro to Drop It Like It's Hot is great. And also like a kickstart a party type of thing. If you wanted to go Snoop, if it was Eminem, obviously Lose Yourself has a very, we all know the beginning, and it's a sports anthem. Like they have to play Lose Yourself at some point at the Super Bowl. What are we going to do here? Till I Collapse is another kind of like get fired up for a sporting event type of thing. And it's a great way to start. Like there are so many songs that have that great, like grab your attention right out of the gate where I think people would just go, whoa, yay, they're playing this. And it just fires everybody up. But then it comes down to who you want to start the show. And,
right,
you know, do you start with like, it's not Dre. Dre doesn't start it. Dre comes out, I think, last or one of the last, maybe even like forgot
could
about
come
Dre.
Out with Snoop since they've done so many things together. And but it seems like
I think it's a slow reveal.
That's watering him down. You know, he's such a big personality to come out together. Seems like he'd be watering him down.
I think they all have separate intros. Now here's my question. Cause I do think Eminem has some really good ones that just like go, okay. And now we're starting. And he's got some really good beats at the start of his songs. And he started the trailer. He's the first person seen in the trailer that came out. I don't know if we can read into that, but would they start with him for an LA Super Bowl, or do they need to go hard on the West Coast right out of the gate rather than a Detroit guy?
No, I totally get that. But I think I'm completely with you. They can't miss the opportunity to Lose Yourself, because it's just all about this, you know, your one opportunity in the Super Bowl. Could they open with it? Then you're right. They're opening with Eminem and it feels like they're sort of burying the lead a little bit doing that. You bring up a lot of good points. Watching the teaser, the one thing that jumped out at me, and it's something I thought about, and then I went online, found out that other people were thinking the same thing, is okay, Tupac's California Love makes a whole lot of sense. And then, you know what? It was 10 years ago that Tupac's hologram was on the stage at Coachella, basically, you know, Palm Springs area. It was 10 years ago. So like, would they bring back the Tupac hologram for when they
anything about holograms, but technically would that be hard to do in the middle of a field?
Well, they did it in the middle of the Coachella Valley, which I
but on a stage, right, with a backdrop. There is no backdrop to the Super Bowl halftime show because you are in a round.
Are they like, all the way around? Don't they sometimes do a backdrop? I'm trying to remember. I remember going to the Tampa, Arizona one, and I think it was Springsteen, and I'm pretty sure he had a backdrop. So he had like the back of his stage. I don't know how the setup.
You could certainly concoct one.
Right.
Like, exactly. I mean, it's all for the television audience, but I'm just thinking, having been to Super Bowls, I've never felt like, oh, I'm on the back of the stage and I can't see what's happening. Like they just literally, you know, hung up a curtain. And so now I'm blocked off. I've never felt that way when I was there. So,
They
could do it, you know, like half of the Weeknd's halftime performance was like behind the scenes. Like, I don't even know where he was. By the way, that was lame.
That was crazy. And like, he had no like surprise guests or anything. That was like, it was a very kind of shocking. I expected with all his connections, he'd done a lot of like collaborative songs and nobody showed up. It was just the Weeknd the whole time. So I did throw in the Tupac. Will any of these three join the five on stage at any point? And that was Jay-Z, who's Rock Nation Entertainment Company, is co-producing the show. Ice Cube, because it just makes a lot of sense. He's a SoCal lifer and, you know, obviously has his history with Dr. Dre. And then and then the Tupac hologram. So the whole idea that I think it's just enough to entice people to think it might happen. I don't know where I'm landing on that yet, but there's going to be a lot of people on stage as it is.
So are these your odds or are these from a betting site here? The first song played that I'm looking at.
I think it's Bet Online, I believe. Yeah. If I list odds, they're not my odds. They're, okay. They're odds I pulled from somebody. I think that one was Bet Online.
Okay. So it looks like the one with the best odds to be the first song is California Love at +250, or at least it was when your article was published. It might've changed. I think I would bet that as the last song.
Me too. Yeah. And that was the last song on the teaser, which I would, and you can add that if like people are playing at home, you want to add in the last song, feel free, or to add another one I'm thinking about adding, just to go out on my own is the last performer to actually show up on stage, because I asked the question about who's going to be the first one, but who's going to be the last one if you don't think they're all going to show up at the first at the very beginning
on stage, because Tupac wouldn't count if it is a hologram,
right? Exactly.
Then now we're getting into the weeds of like what actually counts as an answer here.
That's right.
I don't know if I would think that there would be another guest. Like the Ice Cube thing makes sense for sure, but if it was going to be Ice Cube, I think you just add him to the list.
Right.
Like, why would he be low key under the radar and be fine with being billed lower than all of those other artists?
Yeah, unless he's just there anyways. And he's like,
hey, I'm going to the game. I got nothing else to do.
Exactly. Just, you know, curveballs. You just got to always think that, you know, somebody, and maybe it's Jay-Z, thinking there's a curveball that he likes to throw. So you got to keep yourself open to these things.
I feel like, with regard to halftime shows, though, sometimes there have been songs like the one with Shakira comes to mind, where I don't know half the songs. And right. I'm wondering if this is an instance where they will play a song that we don't know as well, if there will be one somewhere in there that's good for the show in their mind, but is not a popular. I kind of feel like, sitting where I sit, which is nowhere, that they should just play their hits, literally just go all bangers, shove it all in, because there's so many. And that's the way to get everyone to say, like, that was the best halftime show ever, which I kind of am hoping that they will understand. Like, the library is so extensive, squeeze them all in.
Yeah, don't go obscure. Although my soon to be 18-year-old daughter, who is hipper to the hop than I am, keeps telling me, hey, Kendrick Lamar, his next album is a huge deal, because he hasn't come out with one in a long, long, long time. And they've talked, he's already said it's coming out in 2022. And she's like, do not be surprised if he teases something from his new album when he's up there. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting thought. And so, you know, you might hear something from Kendrick Lamar. If you don't, if you've never heard it before, maybe it's a new drop there.
You've got a total songs played.
Yeah.
Prop here.
That one's legit. That came on online. 10.5. A typical halftime show runs 13, 14 minutes. There's five massive stars with, as you said, a massive catalog of hits. I think it's going to be a fast and furious medley of songs jumping around.
Yes.
And
not a full song.
Right. Yeah. There's no way they're doing full songs. No. And so 10.5 is what the number is. I might think they get to 11 or 12. Right now I'm leaning the over on that.
I think it'd be interesting too, because in this case, they could almost play, like, they could cross over just like a couple of bars. Yeah. I'm not into music, so I'm probably butchering the language that people use for this, but like a couple bars of this into a couple bars of this into a couple bars of, now we're going to go into this song for a longer period of time.
Yeah. I think medley or a mashup where you're bouncing back and forth, yep. You know, yeah, I agree. It's definitely, which I think is going to be a lot of fun, you know, because there's such cool songs, such cool hooks. You can just bounce them from hook to hook. It's going to be great. It's going to be off the hook.
The halftime show is really one of the most extraordinary feats that they pull off on this day. And not just the show, it's the fact that, and having been in the audience before, it's incredible. The amount of time that they have to get it all set up, it's like nothing, you know? So there's a couple of minutes for so many people to just run out onto the field, get it all set up. The setup and then the tear down on the back end is just really one of the most underrated parts of it. Like, nobody really cares how the sausage gets made, you know,
right.
But in that regard, it's one of the most fascinating things that I've witnessed, because it's really quite a production, right? Like, they're putting on a concert and they're setting up the concert in a matter of minutes and then pulling it off in almost every case that we can remember without a hitch.
I totally agree.
Boobies being exposed.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can bet on, you know, the wardrobe malfunction as well. But I agree with you. And, you know, I haven't been to SoFi Stadium. I'm sure you probably have. But I think it's an amazing stadium, and, you know, it's going to have the latest and greatest, you know, probably state-of-the-art technology and things like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing this halftime show in that setting and the Super Bowl. Frankly, I really want to go to that stadium because I think it's an awesome looking venue.
I am very much looking forward to seeing it. Which of the game props end up being the most popular and do you feel most strongly about?
Yeah, I think the game props, obviously, like the spread. I throw it just, you know, straight line. What's the spread? I have to look and see what I've done, because I do some hybrids, and a few of these game props I just made up myself, like non running back or wide receiver touchdown. Will there be one? And I just was like,
ooh.
And I went and looked. I just looked up every non running back or wide receiver touchdown for both teams, and it was amazing that there was a total of 20 in 40 combined games, which is a perfect yes or no bet, you know, because it's right down the middle. I mean, you could put that out there at -110 on either side, because it's been like, you know, every two games you're going to get one non running back wide receiver touchdown. So
quarterback sneak would count.
Quarterback sneak would count, and
a Philly special style play would count.
Right. And I also put in the will there be a flea flicker, a non quarterback pass, a fake punt, or an onside kick. If any of those hit, then, and you say yes, then you'd win that one. But Matt Stafford, the Rams had like no defensive touchdowns. Matt Stafford didn't have a quarterback rushing touchdown, and then in the postseason, Stafford's run for two touchdowns, and David Long, the safety for the Rams, had a defensive touchdown. So they picked up the pace in the postseason.
Let's see, in terms of first team to score, that's obviously one. That's an easy one.
Right. Yeah. And the Rams are favored in that one, but really it could just be who wins the coin flip. You know, it was the first team to score. I like the Cooper Kupp versus Ja'Marr Chase longest catch, because
that's a good one.
I do the SiriusXM radio show with Brad Evans, my colleague, and we will bet props every week on certain things. When it comes to the Rams and the Bengals, what we've consistently hit on over the course of the year is like a longest catch over under by Ja'Marr Chase and Cooper Kupp. I mean, these guys are so consistent at getting them. And, you know, I looked up 25 plus yard catches. I think Cooper Kupp had 23 of them. Chase was back a ways at 16, but you go to 40 yard catches, 9 for Kupp, 8 for Chase. So if there's a big play, it's almost a coin flip as to who might have the longer catch in this one. So I think it'll be a good showdown between those two.
That's a good one. For the post game, what color Gatorade?
Yeah.
Always a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. This is an interesting one, because I think, the intel right now is the Bengals, obviously, it makes sense. They've pretty much been orange, you know.
That makes sense. Have they? Because that one would think, but what if they don't like orange? Have they actually been orange?
They have been orange, but I have, one of my colleagues says he's talked to the Gatorade official before, and they randomly choose three colors, and then so the teams don't really have a say in it.
What? That's messed up.
Yeah, it's totally messed up. So if that's true, then it is a complete guessing game. Although orange, I believe, has been since 2000, has showed up 5 times. That's the leader. Clear is 4 times. Forget what the other one is 4 times. And then blue is 3rd at 3 times. And the other one at 4 times was none, which 3 times was Bill Belichick, who's pretty much the curmudgeon. He probably issued an edict. I will not be Gatorade showered after we win the Super Bowl.
Don't you dare. I do this every year. I don't want to be wet. It's unfortunate. I don't care that much. Yeah, clear doesn't, that's not a good look. So that is surprising to me that someone random controls that and that they would do that just because of the optics. One would think that the NFL would be like, hey, this is like a big moment. So like, let's, you know, create a like photographic kind of, moment, right. You know?
Although, yeah, I think Gatorade is big on their frost, you know, that frost flavor. So I think all those are kind of that murky clear color. So who knows, maybe, but I agree. I mean, it's visually like the photo on the front page of the newspaper the next day that shows like splashing yes. blue or splashing orange. Yeah. That's a better look. So I'm not going to bet on clear.
No,
it's been there. And so you have to take it seriously.
But I wonder if we have to take seriously too, that they wouldn't put orange on the Rams. Like that would be weird, right? Like, do they find a neutral color that doesn't make it?
That's where I'm like, is it really random? In which case it could be. Do the Rams really spend a lot of time saying, whatever happens, we cannot have orange Gatorade on our sidelines for this game? Or are they just drinking?
We won't drink that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I will not get hydrated if it's orange Gatorade.
Oh, that's so interesting that they don't get to pick. I did not know that, because so for years we've had people on set, like at NFL Network, we would ask people, would be like, what's your favorite Gatorade flavor, and try and process that information so that we could work it into, you know, whether or not the prop would play out. I remember Drew Brees saying at one point, like his favorite was lime or something. I'm making that up at this point, but he specifically said, and I was like, filed away for when the Saints are in the Super Bowl.
That's right. Drew Brees is going to demand that the rest of the team drinks his favorite Gatorade. Yeah.
But now that I know that's not how it works, I don't know what to do with anything. Nothing makes sense anymore.
Well, and that's just kind of like, you know, it's hearsay, but it's also, I keep hearing it and I tend to kind of believe it, because why would teams want to waste their time thinking about more details as they head into the, you know, the biggest game of their lives?
Brandon, it's not like Sean McVay is sitting at home going, what color or flavor do I want? But, you know, someone on the Rams staff is like, this is my job. Don't you take this out of my hands. I'm the Gatorade person. I know what my guys like.
Well, you say Sean McVay too, but something tells me that he's so like, you know, tightly strung and fastidious that maybe he has room to think about every detail, including the Gatorade color. So I would not put that past Sean McVay.
Right. I'm going to do more research on this. I like that you've got my head spinning in some different ways. All right. So finally, before I let you go, the over under game, who wins? That's obviously the biggest one, and one that people can participate in without even any knowledge about the two teams. Which are you taking, Rams or Cincy?
Yeah. So against the spread, I think I'm leaning Cincy. I mean, I don't think we're giving enough credit to Cincy going on the road and beating the number one seed in the AFC and then going into Kansas City, arguably the toughest venue in football, and beating the Kansas City Chiefs. Not leaning towards the Bengals winning outright, but I am leaning towards them covering the spread. I say it's going to be a last possession win for the Rams. And right now my working score is 26-23.
I like the way your brain is working, because I think it gives you two paths to win.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. If the Bengals do win, you win. And if it's like a field goal win, which we've seen so much of in the postseason, then you win also.
Yeah. I'm a Seahawks fan. I'm not. I'm glad that the NFC is representing. NFC West is represented.
But not really.
But yeah. But I don't want the Rams. I do not want the Rams. This seems like a fun team in the Bengals to get behind. You know, it's funny. I was talking about Joe Burrow, because if he wins, he would be like the fourth quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl in the second year, and Tom Brady was like the first one to do it. And I was trying to remember if I thought of Tom Brady like I do Joe Burrow right now back then. And if Joe Burrow has like a crazy successful career, will I end up like just not liking him as a, you know, just like rooting against him over and over again ultimately? Because he seems so likable right
now. Ugh, will he go away?
Yeah, exactly. And that, obviously I respect Tom Brady, and you know, I'm glad that the NFL had Tom Brady. But man, he was fun to root against and just to really to hate as a fan, you know. So I'm just curious, like, if Burrow continues to have this kind of success, if that will turn against him ultimately, like it did for a lot of people with Tom Brady.
Brandon, this is good stuff. You've got me thinking. I'm sure a lot of people listening as well. And you have, again, provided a downloadable Word document. So if people don't want to go do all of this legwork with regards to the props, it's a really easy place to go and print it out, and you can entertain the people at your party. And I fully intend to do that. I'm not throwing a party. I'm not that person, but I am going to go to somebody else's.
Yeah.
That's a lot of responsibility.
We're having construction done at our house. So I'm waiting for the best offer I get to go to somebody else's party, because we won't be hosting one this year as well.
What kind of food will you be served?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, we'll be there. Brandon, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, Lindsay.
Good stuff from Brandon, and you can find that prop sheet that we talked about along with sound fantasy advice at his Twitter handle at Brandon Funston. And that's going to do it for today's show, the last of the 2021 season. By this time next week, we're going to have a new champion, and we will officially be in the offseason, and frankly, I'm excited for both things. Looking forward to the game and breaking down what happens in it next week on the show. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, we'd really appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star review or a 5-star rating, also a review, both things. Subscribe on the Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts, whatever platform. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app, which is free for most subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. For video clips of the show and more, follow me on Twitter, Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram at LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer, and a special thanks to SiriusXM's Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, Steve Cohen. Enjoy the game, everybody. We'll meet you back here again next week.
SiriusXM Podcasts.